This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
Created equal.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and with me in the studio is our producer, Carrie Jr. the second.
Good morning, live on a Monday.
Live on a Monday.
How was your weekend?
We don't always do that, right?
How was your weekend, Stephen?
It was good. Kind of restful. I mean, the temperature kind of finally broke yesterday, so it was nice to be outside again.
I'm going to say the same thing. A little bit of relief from those high temperatures. Happy to hop into our topic for today.
Yes. So today we're going to talk about a new pill that is available over the counter, birth control pill that is available over the counter. This is the first over the counter birth control pill approved in the United States. And it's kind of perfect timing for this conversation. One of the lead stories in the New York Times this morning is about the turn in the fight over women's reproductive access and health inequality from the issue of abortion to the issue of pregnancy and how the government regulates drugs that that prevent pregnancy and other aids that that enhance the fact the chance of someone getting pregnant. That's now where the politics of this are kind of clashing with each other. And so this new over-the-counter birth control pill is kind of an entry along the path of the arguments about how the government ought to interact with women when it comes to these issues.
Yeah, and is that article asking about the restrictions that are being implemented now, or things like this, where now we're providing more access, or is it just the
fight between both. And things like the ruling in Alabama about in vitro fertilization. The front in these battles is shifting away from abortion now that the U.S. Supreme Court has said, look, states can regulate abortion like they regulate lots of other things. There is no constitutional right at stake there. Now they're talking about these other things.
Yeah. And recently, these things are new, specifically this over-the-counter pill. Last year in July is when the FDA approved the pill, and that's 50 years after it was originally approved for prescription. Expected to be 98% effective, just like other birth control, except this one you don't need a prescription. But now we get into the question of cost and access and insurance. And our guest today, who's going to be an expert in this field and understand the potential barriers that also still present themselves on this issue, can speak to. Her name is Dr. Meredith Field. She's an assistant professor in the Division of Social Sciences at Alfred University. And she's a medical sociologist. She specializes in issues of access and equity in health and medicine. So perfect for what we want to talk about today.
Yeah. We want to make sure that we sort of point out here that there's a little bit of irony in the fact that it's Carrie and I sitting here talking about this issue, two men whose rights are not really at stake here. That's one of the reasons that we have the guests that we do. But also we want to encourage our listeners, our female listeners, to call up and participate in this conversation as well.
On to Meredith Field.
Dr. Meredith Fields, welcome to Created Equal.
Thank you so much. I'm so pleased to be joining you this morning.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm great, and it's great to have you and your perspective here to talk about this issue. Let's start with the kind of, I guess, news of this segment and of this show. The O-pill. This is the over-the-counter birth control pill that was approved last year. Let's talk about what that is and I guess how it's different from the prescription birth control pills we have been talking about and living with in America so far.
Sure. So I want to start by saying I'm located in Western New York State. So all the listeners know that. And just over the weekend, I was happy to walk into a pharmacy and see the O-pill behind the counter. And it was looking pretty affordable. I think it was listed for $25 there. And so that made me very happy. So basically, the O-pill is a hormonal birth control oral contraceptive you can get without a prescription. You can go into a pharmacy, go up to the counter, ask for it. It has one hormone in it, and it doesn't contain estrogen. So it's different than most pills in that way. And it's a daily, just like most pills that people are used to taking for birth control. Just take it once a day.
So let's talk about the, I guess, the differences, a little more about the differences here. I'm not sure that everybody, especially if you're not a woman, understands what women have to do to get birth control pills that are not over the counter. Talk about the, I guess, the access differences that this will make.
Sure. Oh my gosh. And there's so many access issues when we talk about reproductive health care generally. So typically, if someone wants to take the hormonal birth control pill, they need to first find a provider who prescribes the pill. They need to get an appointment. They need to get to the appointment, which for some people is not possible if they don't live in a place with public transportation, if they don't have their own vehicle, if they can't get time off work. When they go to their appointment, they need to be able to say what they're trying to get, be able to talk about what they're looking for. They, of course, cannot go to a provider if they can't afford to, one of the biggest access issues in the U.S. So if they are paying out of pocket, that might make it prohibitive. Of course, we have some clinics that have sliding scale fees and make it more affordable for people. If someone does have insurance, their insurance company might restrict who they are allowed to go see, right? Who's in network, who's not, what the different costs will be.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, once somebody goes to meet with a provider, the really important piece of feeling like they can trust the provider, feeling like they're building some sort of rapport and can have a positive relationship with that person. All of these things often create barriers to people accessing the pill and reproductive health care more broadly.
Yeah, yeah. A few months ago, we did a show here on Created Equal about OBGYN deserts, which is a term that's being used to describe how difficult it is for women in certain parts of the country now to even find a doctor to manage their reproductive health. I feel like what you were just explaining becomes a much more arduous burden, I guess, in the light of that trend as well.
Yeah. So this is a trend that has been ongoing for several decades. We've had first hospital closures that we were noticing in a lot of areas, both in urban and rural areas. And then we started to see a shortage of providers, all different kinds of healthcare providers, right? Like we hear a lot about a shortage of mental health care providers, especially during the pandemic. But OBGYNs, the people who specialize in obstetric and gynecological medicine, a major shortage of those physicians and those providers. And it really varies from state to state.
Mm-hmm.
It varies within a state, even within a city, right? Depending on the neighborhood you live in, the part of the city you're in, the amount and quality of healthcare that's available to you varies greatly.
Yeah. And of course, when we talk about access and equality, and especially in the healthcare context, what we see are inequalities that run along the lines of inequalities in other ways. So women of color in particular have a particular challenge, I guess, making sure that they have this access that we're talking about, both to doctors, to insurance, the trust factor. All of those things really get enhanced when you're talking about non-white women.
Right. Yeah, and there's a long history of this. Some great books that if any of your listeners are interested in reading more about this, I would recommend is Harriet Washington's Medical Apartheid, which goes back and looks at the history of medicine developing as a profession and how people of color were used as, you know, not consenting subjects.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, we were lab rats in many regards.
Exactly. And because of that history and ongoing bias in healthcare, a lot of people, for good reason, people of color, have concerns about going to a doctor, about allowing any sort of medical interventions, about taking a pill that they don't know exactly what's in it, right? Dorothy Roberts, Killing the Black Body, anything about Harriet or Henrietta Lacks. I mean, these are all great things to help understand the context, the historical and structural context that has set people of color up for not trusting medicine, unfortunately.
Yeah. So back to the O-pill, which is available here in Michigan now as well. What are your expectations about what it can change and how much change it can have? Not just because it's over the counter and is a step toward a lower barrier, but also on the other end, because of the context in which we're talking about these things now, all of these new arguments, kind of old arguments, I guess, new again, about reproductive health. It does seem like there are more efforts right now to control women and what they do with their bodies.
Yeah. So let's see, a few things to say in response to that. First, you know, I have a background in abortion research. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we talk about in that context is the whittling away of bodily autonomy and the whittling away of access to reproductive health care. And so, you know, in the data that we've been collecting, we've seen this coming, right, for years. And we've seen that abortion is the big one. And if anti-choice people and anti-abortion people were able to make progress on that, it was just a matter of time before we'd see other kinds of reproductive health care attacked and become part of that whittling away of rights and access.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. This broader context really matters because it's all part of a larger strategy. And we are in a moment with a lot of attention being given to this. I mean, I think the makeup of the SCOTUS right now definitely lends itself to trying to make progress for people who want to whittle that away. So that's a big piece of it. I think relating that to the O-pill is really important because, like you said, it does have the potential to make hormonal birth control much more accessible to a broader population. And that is very powerful. And so anything that has that much potential power is also seen as a potential threat, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's going to continue to be under attack in various ways. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there's one other thing that I wanted to mention. I don't know if you were planning to talk about this later, but just the issue of Medicaid restrictions as well, because even for something like the O-pill being over the counter, for people with Medicaid, they can't necessarily get it covered without a prescription.
Hmm.
And this all varies from state to state, even if people wanted to use condoms, right, and get reimbursed for that or get covered for that. In many places, they would need a prescription if they have Medicaid to be able to do that. So we really, in general, don't make it easy for people to access contraceptives and reproductive health care in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the new O-pill. We're going to keep our guest, Dr. Meredith Field. We also want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a call and let us know if you know about the O-pill, the over-the-counter birth control pill. Are you someone who is going to take advantage of this? We'd also love to hear from listeners about the kinds of things that you've had to go through to obtain contraceptives. Are you someone who has had a physician perhaps give you a hard time about wanting the birth control pill? Talk about when you were younger and maybe first wanted contraceptives. What was that like? What was the relationship like between you and your physician, and how important was that in your ability to manage your own reproductive life that way? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can make you part of the conversation that way. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and today we're talking about the equality of reproductive health. A new product that is on the market called the O-pill is the first over-the-counter birth control pill available here in the United States. We're talking about how that fits into the narrative of the debates and arguments, fights, really, about women's reproductive health that have been happening in this country for some time. The idea of an over-the-counter version of the birth control pill really changes the picture of access to birth control for women in this country, or at least it has the potential to. Dr. Meredith Field is an assistant professor at Alfred University in New York. She's a board member the National Women's Health Network, and a medical sociologist who specializes in issues of access and equity in health and medicine. She's talking to us about the O-pill, how different it is from the prescribed method of getting birth control pills, which has controlled women's reproductive health for a really long time. We want to hear from you as well on the phones. Give us a sense of whether you are aware that there is now an over-the-counter birth control pill available right here in the state of Michigan, as well as in other places around the country. Is this something that you plan to take advantage of? We'd also love to hear from our women listeners about their experience with reproductive health. Talk about the barriers that you feel like maybe you have experienced trying to obtain contraceptives. Tell us about maybe the first time that you had to tell your physician that you wanted birth control pills. How did that go? And how important was the relationship that you had with your physician in that conversation? These are issues that, of course, women deal with all the time in our country. And this new development maybe could make things just a little easier. I'm thinking especially for young women, this could be a remarkable change. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You could also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal, or at WDET. Dr. Field, I want to start here talking about that the access to birth control goes beyond providers, that we also have an issue in some cases with pharmacies. They are able to refuse to fill contraceptive prescriptions or provide emergency contraception and or refuse to stock contraceptives. We talked about OBGYN deserts. There are also kind of contraceptive deserts. Isn't that right?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, part of this relates to some of the Supreme Court cases that were looking at religious organizations who were employers having the ability to get a religious exemption, right, to not cover certain reproductive health care. And now we have individual pharmacists and certain pharmacy companies that are also saying, we don't have to do this. This doesn't align with our beliefs, and they can get religious exemption. So that creates more of a desert for contraceptives. I mean, we have this similar kind of thing happening in terms of maternal health care, where there are places that hospitals have closed and the only hospital left is a Catholic hospital that won't provide certain kinds of reproductive health care. So the issue of religious exemptions and religious freedom in the U.S. Intersecting with reproductive health care does further limit access and makes it almost impossible for people in certain areas to get care.
And as we were discussing with OBGYN deserts and other access issues, race and, of course, income have a lot to do with this as well. Why are women of color, for instance, more likely to live in these contraceptive deserts?
Yeah, so there are a number of factors that play into it. I mean, part of it goes back to segregation in cities. And one of my favorite books that I use in teaching is The Death Gap, which is written by a physician in Chicago who worked in hospitals in different parts of the city. And he does an amazing job of outlining the very different levels of healthcare, amount of healthcare, access to organ donation in different neighborhoods based on race. You can see that the white neighborhoods have much better healthcare and more access to contraceptives, all the medications, mm-hmm. than people in Black and Latinx neighborhoods, for example. So we've got segregation of cities as part of it. We have the intersections of class, the wealth gap happening in the U.S., right? So lots of pieces to it.
I also want to spend just a little time going back in history a bit to talk about why we continue to have some of these arguments about women's reproductive freedom. As I said in the open of the show, I actually had the number wrong. I said we're about 70 years from the Supreme Court essentially trying to wrest the issue of reproductive freedom away from the government and give it to physicians and to women. Griswold v. Connecticut is the ruling. It's 1965, not 1955, so it's more like 60 years and not 70. Still, that's a long time to have been having this argument, and it has sort of ebbed and flowed. It's gone in one direction pretty quickly and then kind of been pulled back in the other. But talk about that ruling, why it was so important, and I guess why it hasn't had, I think, the effect that might have been predicted from it, which would have been that the government just can't interfere in these issues in quite the way that some people still want it to.
Yeah, so that ruling was important because it was basically saying that the U.S. government should stay out of people's marriages, stay out of people's private conversations with their healthcare providers, and they should be able to make these decisions about their family planning, especially. But we have a legal system and a court system that is not impartial, right? Mm-hmm. Is not bipartisan. And so as the pendulum swings in our kind of national political stage and the Supreme Court shifts, we take advantage. Different groups of people, different special interest groups take advantage of the moment, the cultural context, to say, hey, this is a moment where we could push our agenda and potentially get some traction on this. It is very intertwined with the kind of religious and moral founding of this country, mm-hmm. and the kind of power that the founding people, white men, had, and their interests and wanting to maintain their power, to be perfectly honest. So the more that the people in power can control the reproduction of and the health care decisions and the health of the people that they want to control, the more their power is sustained, right?
Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. And call and tell us if you're someone who's going to take advantage of the O-pill, the new and first ever over-the-counter birth control pill available here in the United States. Also, give us a sense of how your relationship with your physician has gone with regard to reproductive health. Have you found challenges to obtaining contraceptives for instance, in the past, either from your physician or a pharmacy or some other institution that is involved in reproductive freedom? Again, 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. Let's start today with Janet in Dearborn. Janet, welcome to the show.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I'm super excited about this. This is going to be huge for women. Like, it's a wonderful step forward. But I wanted your guests to just touch on the side effects of the progesterone pill. I don't really know that much about it, but I am concerned about how the medical community kind of downplays a lot of women's experience of side effects or education in that area. And then also to touch on the movement forward for men's birth control as well, because I feel like past that, that's like the next step. So super excited and proud to be having this conversation today, but also thinking about moving forward too.
Yeah. Jen, I really appreciate the call. Great questions, both of them. That first question, Dr. Field, about the side effects. Talk about the side effects of, I guess, this new pill versus the side effects of the old one. They are different, correct?
Yeah, they are different. And so one of the things that makes this pill safer for most people is that it's a progestin-only pill. And so traditionally, many hormonal birth control pills are a combination of estrogen and progestin. And that combination, and especially the estrogen, can make it more dangerous for people with pre-existing conditions like high blood pressure or diabetes, people who smoke. So the progestin-only pill is actually considered to be much safer. And I think that's a real positive too, right? That we're getting out a safer pill over the counter. Of course, anytime we alter the hormone levels in our bodies, there's some risk associated with that. And that's something that has been discussed in terms of birth control, in terms of hormone replacement therapy for people who are in perimenopause, mm-hmm. that shift between perimenopause and menopause. But again, this is progestin only. And so the main thing that they've seen in some people using it is some irregular spotting, but it's really a gentler way of providing hormonal contraception than a combination pill.
Yeah. And so one question I think would also be about if you're able to get it over the counter, you still need a physician, right, to make sure that you're not suffering from any other side effects and things like that. In other words, just the fact that it's over the counter doesn't say that you don't need somebody to help manage the use of
it. Yeah, it's always important to have a provider who you trust. This is one of the tragic things about the healthcare system in the U.S. right now, that we have a shortage of providers. Mm-hmm. But just having somebody you can trust, because there are also people who are at higher risk when they're using any sort of hormones, including people that have liver diseases or if they have a history of breast cancer. So, yes, it's absolutely important to, even if you can't for some reason access a provider, do your own research, right? And unfortunately, we live in a world and a time when we really have to be our own best advocates. And so while it's ideal to have a provider, that's not possible for everyone.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's go to Janet's second question, which is about the male birth control pill, the fictional for now idea of a male birth control pill. I have a lot of women friends who have, made much of the idea that there's not even a product to try in that regard, and that the burden sits firmly on women. Are we anywhere with the idea of a pill that guys could take that would prevent pregnancy?
Yeah, some of my colleagues are working on trials of different types of birth control for males. And we are making progress. The biggest hurdle that we need to overcome is the stigma surrounding this, the fear that using male birth control could affect your masculinity negatively, could affect your virility, right? Mm-hmm. All of the things that we associate with being masculine traditionally. So it's a real, I think, kind of culture shift that we have to work on. Some of the things that have been tested in clinical trials on humans, there's just been too many complaints of side effects like headaches or fatigue. And these are things that people with uteruses who take hormonal birth control are dealing with all the time, right? We're kind of used to it, because we have been forced to take on that burden because there wasn't an option for males. So we are making progress, but I think a lot of it is kind of like a re-socialization of how we think about masculinity and understanding that taking the male pill, if it existed, is not going to make you less of a man.
Yeah.
That's definitely an important piece. You know, people are working on it. I love to have that conversation with my students in some of my classes. And one of the things that I think we forget is that not only is the burden primarily on people with uteruses right now to handle contraceptives, but it also means that people with penises have to rely on those people, right? I would think that would be scary too, that you don't have as much control over the family planning and contraception in a sexual relationship. So
there's an awful lot of trust that would be involved there. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Meredith Field about the O-pill. Also want to continue to hear from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social call. And let us know if you're someone who's going to be a customer of the over-the-counter birth control pill, which is now available. Also give us a sense of how you manage your reproductive health otherwise, and whether you experience barriers or challenges, maybe from a physician, maybe from a pharmacy, about the choices that you make. 313-577-1019 is the number. It's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you're with us. We're talking about the O-pill, the over-the-counter birth control pill that is now available, was approved last year for sale. It is the first over-the-counter birth control pill available in the United States. Dr. Meredith Field is with us. She is an assistant professor at Alfred University in New York. She's also a board member of the National Women's Health Network, and a medical sociologist who specializes in issues of access and equity in health and medicine. We're talking about what this new development, what this new pill means for access and equality with women's reproductive health. We want to hear from you, the listeners, during the conversation as well. Give us a sense if you're someone who's going to use the O-pill, someone who maybe is already out and buying an over-the-counter version of the birth control pill. Tell us why and whether you're excited to be able to do that. Also, call and tell us about how these kinds of issues come up in your reproductive health. How do you manage it with your physician? How do you manage it with pharmacies? Have there been barriers or challenges that you have experienced trying to get birth control pills, especially I know that often young women sometimes experience those barriers when they're first talking about birth control pills. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. Dr. Field, I want to talk about how this pill actually got developed, and I guess why it took so long. I mean, it's been such a long time. Why is this now, I guess, the time for the first over-the-counter version of the birth control pill?
Before I talk about that, I want to just follow up on one thing you just said, because mm-hmm. you've said twice now that this could be especially important for younger women. Mm-hmm. And that is something else that I hear from my students all the time, is that, you know, for younger women who are on their parents' insurance,
right,
if they want to get access to hormonal contraceptives, their parents are going to find out. It's going to get billed to the insurance, and their parents are going to find out. And so that is a major total barrier for many young people. So this being over the counter will hopefully eliminate that for people who want to access it but need to do it kind of privately without their parents' knowledge of it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's huge. That's a really big piece of it. And I'm glad that you mentioned it twice already. It's really
important. Yes, I can imagine. I mean, you know, I of course don't have these experiences, but I hear about them quite a bit, and I know that, you know, in some families this is you know, this is a controversial subject or issue or a challenging issue, and that sometimes young women, even when they are adults, because now, I mean, people can stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26. So it can be a barrier. I mean, this can be one of the things that prevents people from being able to control their own reproductive health.
Yeah. So, okay. So sorry, back to the other question. Mm-hmm. I think it was about the timing.
Yes. And how this all got developed at this point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've had progestin only hormonal pills in the past. But there wasn't as much of an imperative to make them available over the counter, even though, you know, people, advocates and lots of people with uteruses have been asking for that for decades. But I think there were a couple things. I think obviously the reversal of Roe v. Wade and the recognition that, okay, so now there are many more people who can't access kind of emergency services like abortion care. We need to try and make contraception more available. That's a big part of it. I think also the timing of the pandemic and having, you know, lockdowns and people not being able to get out and go get healthcare in general added to it. And there's, you know, a lot of data coming in now about pandemic babies. I have friends who said they would never be parents, and suddenly they were pregnant during the pandemic. So I think those are big pieces of the timing. And I think also, like you mentioned earlier, just so much attention is being given to kind of the structural issues around access to reproductive health care and how the various pieces are connected, that there's more of an organized effort to try and create better solutions where they can be created.
Yeah. What kind of education goes into, you know, making sure people understand all of this? If you go and purchase this at a pharmacy, are the pharmacists prepared to tell you everything that you need to know?
Are pharmacists prepared? Good question. I mean, I know that, let's see, I had to get my first hormonal contraceptive when I was a teenager. And it came with a long insert of detailed medical terms that were not easy to decipher.
Sure.
Right? So all medications come with that kind of thing, but you really have to know or spend a lot of time looking up terms to understand what that information is telling you. I have not seen the insert for the O-pill yet, but I imagine that it is written more clearly than prescription contraceptives. I would hope that pharmacists are all trained and prepared to answer questions, because certainly the people at the front counter should not be expected to know the answers to questions about the O-pill.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of information online, really good information put out by the manufacturer, put out by Planned Parenthood, put out by other kinds of departments of health and human services in various states. There's a real effort to make sure that people understand how to use it. But again, like I said, you use it in the same way that most hormonal pills are used. You just take it once daily at the same time. And if you can do that, it is said to be about 98% effective. So this is always the thing with the pill, because it's a daily pill, anyone that you use to get up to that 98% effective rate, you have to remember to take it every day and make sure you're not, you know, using antibiotics or something else that can interfere with its effectiveness. So,
yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag or add us. Let's go next to Tracy in Monroe. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of on the other end of the spectrum, but I know I grew up in the 80s, and we were given classes in school about just reproductive health. And as a teen, I myself went to the health department, was able to acquire contraceptives. Sorry, I was thinking my brain was not working with me there.
That's okay.
And I know now, so I just listening further to your conversation, one, I don't feel that kids in today's educational process are given the same education that I was. I think there's a lot that goes on in families where people are not wanting this for their children. And the other side of it is that a lot of parents don't even know about this. I have been a community health home-based therapist. I am not any longer, and I did not realize there was this over-the-counter available. But the problem I'm also thinking about is that the kids I work with, they don't have the stability to take a pill every day.
Hmm.
And even the injections, the 3 months of whatever those are, is the parent has to go. And if we don't have a parent who's capable of helping their child in this area, how can we as providers in different capacities be there for young people, young ladies?
Yeah. Yeah. Before I go back to our guest, Tracy, I just want to go back to something you said. You said that you went to the health department to get this kind of education and access. Was that, I guess, a common way to do that back in the 80s?
You know what? For me, it was. And I don't know if I was just different. I don't know. Mm. But we did have reproductive class in school.
Uh-huh.
I remember it. The girls went to one and the boys went to another. And
okay,
we learned about like what that means to be pregnant or to how you get pregnant. I mean, it wasn't necessarily about sex or anything. It was just like learning about yourself.
Like information.
Yeah.
Tracy, I'm really glad you called. Dr. Field, I want to get your response to what she's talking about here.
Yeah, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and I also got sex education in my public high school, and it was the same. Males and females were separated, and I thought it was relatively comprehensive. Of course, they didn't talk about pleasure in sex. It was more the kind of trying to prevent pregnancy and STIs education.
Sure.
I love that Tracy knew to go to the county health department or some health department office. I wouldn't have known about that when I was younger. I know now that our county health department even sends out little postcards promoting, you know, getting your reproductive health care and coming in for their STI testing clinics or vaccine clinics, which is amazing. She's also right that the access to sex education is very limited and totally variable. I survey a lot of my classes every semester and ask, raise your hand if you got some sort of formal sex education. Mm-hmm. Raise your hand if someone at home talked to you about sex and reproduction and your health. And it's all over the map. I get all kinds of stories, but a lot of students say that their parents especially did not want to talk about it, and they did not even want to know what the kids were getting in school or weren't getting in school. They just didn't want to confront it at all, unfortunately. So the point is a good one, that how are we supposed to be preparing people to be healthy sexual people, to take care of their bodies, to know what the risks are, to know what the options are, if we are not talking about these things? And I mean, I think this is part of why we have, you know, skyrocketing STI rates, mm-hmm, and problems with that. So it's really important. And I don't know the answer. How do we solve that problem? I teach a whole class on social problems. We lots of questions and not so many answers by the end of the semester, but we have some great conversations. So yeah, it's a really important question.
Yeah, and I have to admit, I don't know the status of sex education in public schools right now. Generally, I mean, I don't know if they're teaching that or not, but I imagine that in many cases the answer is probably no, given the other things that I know they have not continued or had to cut back on.
Yeah, it just really varies. It really varies, and I think that it's more political than budget.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Dr. Meredith Field, it was really wonderful to have you here to talk about the O-pill and women's reproductive freedom. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. Yeah.
So, Carrie, are you excited for the development of the male birth control pill? Dr. Field said it's coming.
You know that you, since you said that and y'all brought it up, I did look it up online, and there were some trials that have been reported in the last month that show some encouraging signs.
Wow.
So maybe we'll see something on the shelves. I don't know.
You know, I mean, I was being, you know, kind of facetious about it there, but I mean, it's a very serious subject, and it is an opportunity, I think, to level the playing field, I think, on that issue.
Definitely.
Between men and women. So that's an encouraging development. Okay, that's going to do it for us here on Created Equal. Created Equal is produced by David Lines and Carrie Jr. II.